Der vi i Norge har hatt sterk statlig styring på alt som har med religion i skolen å gjøre, har folk i England kunnet velge fra en mye mer variert meny. I alle fall de som kan betale for seg. Denise Cush, en nestor i engelsk religionsdidaktikk, sitter i dag i The Commission on Religious Education, en gruppe som blant annet står bak en svært interessant rapport om det engelske religions- og livssynsfaget. Og nettopp det med livssyn har hun en spesiell interesse for. Hva vil det egentlig si å ha et ikke-binært livssyn? Denne vinteren har QRLE-podden fått en ny stemme med på laget. Professor Oddrun Bråten på NTNU er blitt vår internasjonale korrespondent, og det er hun som har intervjuet Denise. Nå er Oddrun på plass i studio og klar for å gi oss en smakebit på forskjellene mellom norsk og engelsk skole før vi får selve intervjuet med Denise Cush. Du hører på QRLE-podden.
Det skal handle om skole, religion og kristendom.
Jeg mener at ingen skal tvinges til å gå på skolegudstjeneste.
Lærerstudentene har kunnskap om disse evnene.
Faget vil inneholde hele 50% kristendom og bare 50% vranglære.
Kompetansemålene i faget.
Det K-en gjør nå, er at den bare markerer at kristendommen har en særlig historie hos oss. Og det er jo sant.
Den K-en kom til for 3,5 år siden. Den var ikke der før.
Det handler først og fremst ikke om K-en.
RLE-faget har jo en litt brokete historie.
Abonnerer de selv på QRLE-podden som lærer?
Ja, det er en selvfølgelig ting.
Hei, Oddrun, og velkommen inn i gjengen her på QRLE-podden.
Hei, Inge. Takk.
Du er jo en som har jobbet lenge med interesse for utlandet. Du gjorde doktorgraden din i England med sammenligning av England og Norge. Og det er få som har så mye peiling som deg på det å se utenfor landegrensene for å lære noe om det som vi kaller for QRLE i skolen. Hvor er det du har vært henne nå? Hvem er det du har snakket med?
Jeg har vært i England og snakket med Denise Cush.
Spennende. Kan ikke du først fortelle lytterne litt om hovedforskjellene på hvordan det er med skole og religion og livssyn i skolen i England til forskjell fra i Norge?
Ja, en viktig forskjell er enhetsskole i Norge mot skolemangfold i England. Det gjør at det er langt flere ulike typer skole i England, og hvordan disse finansieres er viktige blant annet for hva slags religionsundervisning som gis. En annen viktig forskjell er inspeksjon, som er et instrument man bruker i England for kvalitetskontroll i skoler, inkludert av ulike typer religionsundervisning. Det er mange flere religiøse skoler i England, eller skoler med religiøs karakter. Her preges religionsundervisningen av hvilken religion skolen er assosiert med, enten dette er Church of England eller katolske kirker, en eller annen islamsk eller hinduistisk organisasjon, eller noen andre. En viktig forskjell er at mens norsk KRLE er et fag som alle andre i vår nasjonale læreplan, har de nasjonal læreplan i alle andre fag enn religionsfaget i den offentlige skolen. Akkurat læreplanen for religionsfaget lages av lokale læreplankomiteer og blir kalt Local Agreed Syllabuses. I offentlige skoler har de imidlertid et inkluderende religionsfag som ligner på KRLE. Og dette har de hatt siden 1988 i lovsform, men det eksisterte før det i enkelte skoledistrikt. Pioneren for inkluderende religionsfag var Birmingham Local Agreed Syllabus fra 1975, der den kjente engelske religionspedagogen John Hull spilte en sentral rolle. En viktig pådriver her var den voksende spenningen mellom det store antallet innvandrerbarn i skolene i Birmingham og det tradisjonelle kristendomsfaget. Lærere og dem som lagde de lokale læreplanene benyttet anledningen til å gjøre radikale endringer i retning av et inkluderende flerreligiøst fag. Dette var det som interesserte meg da jeg ønsket å studere engelsk religionsundervisning til sammenligning til norsk KRLE i 1997. En viktig forskjell er ellers at loven i England er uendret siden 1988, og det er den jo ikke i Norge. At det var full fritaksrett, og at livssyn i hovedsak ikke har vært en del av det før nå i det siste. Men akkurat nå er det mye snakk om worldviews approach i engelsk religionsdidaktikk. Og det til og med foreslått en endring I navnet fra Religious Education, RE, til Religion and Worldviews Education, RWE, uten at dette så langt har fått noen konsekvenser I lovendringer.
Wow, tusen takk, Audrun. Det en solid presentasjon. Du tegner et bilde av noe som veldig annerledes enn det norske.
Ja.
Men da det veldig bra, Audrun, at du har vært over og snakket med en av disse forskerne I det feltet. Og at vi kan få høre på det. Det altså, ny skuld. Du må fortelle litt om hun også. Hva det for en forsker? Og? Dette her en ny stemme som har dukket opp I det siste, eller?
Nei, absolutt ikke. Hun har vært med lenge. Jeg vil kalle professor Denise Kusch en nestor I engelsk religionsdidaktikk, som John Hull og Robert Jackson også det. Denise jobbet I 29 år ved Bath University og underviste da både I religionsvitenskap og religionsdidaktikk. Og I en periode var hun sammen med Vivian Bounfield, sjefsredaktør I British Journal of Religious Education. Hun forteller meg at hun gikk I katolsk skole da hun var barn selv. Hun var veldig glad I skole og likte alle skolefag, bortsett fra sport og heimkunnskap. Hun valgte biologi, engelsk litteratur og religionsstudier til sin høyere grad, A-levels. I England velger de fordypningsfag på det nivået som tilsvarer vår videregående og får ikke generelle vitnemål, men eksamensvitnemål I utvalgte fag kalt A-levels.
Ja, altså det tilsvarer liksom slutten av videregående for oss?
Ja, men du får tre fag
ja.
Som du har valgt, og du starter en spesialisering da, egentlig ved 11-årsalderen.
Ja, jeg skjønner.
Ja. Hun bestemte seg da for å studere teologi, og ble student I Oxford da hun var 17 år gammel.
Oi.
Og dette faktisk ikke vanlig også.
Nei.
Hun likte seg godt på Oxford, men etter hvert så hun studerte teologi, så fikk hun en nysgjerrighet for ikke-kristne tradisjoner. Og da hun begynte å studere for å bli lærer, så kom hun over noe som Ninian Smart hadde skrevet. Og dermed dro hun til Lancaster for å studere under ham.
Ja.
Her spesialiserte hun seg I religionsfenomenologi, buddhisme og hinduisme, med en avhandling om tibetansk buddhisme.
Ja.
Hun underviste I 9 år ved en katolsk college, altså 16-18-åringer, men forlot institusjonen da hun ikke lenger identifiserte seg med den katolske troen.
Ja.
Og det var da hun havna ved universitetet I Baspa. Og hva som skjedde med hennes egen livsinsutvikling senere, skal vi faktisk få høre om I episoden.
Spennende. Dette altså en skikkelig kapasitet som du har snakket med for KRLE-podden. Skal vi resten bare sette over og gå til intervjuet ditt med Denise?
Det gjør vi.
What have been some of your main interests in terms of research?
So in terms of research, I've been interested within study of religions. The main religions I've been interested in are Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity and paganism. And within religious education or religion and worldviews, I've been interested in... lots of different things, such as recently about people with non-religious worldviews and how we alter religious education to match the changing religious landscape and about the disciplines which underpin religious education and also the idea of being non-binary between religious and non-religious because the world is changing and people make their own worldviews drawing upon a variety of resources from different religions, secular worldviews and all sorts of other things to create their own personal worldview.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have some common interests in some of those topics, you might say. But also, you were editor-in-chief of BGRE, British Journal.
Well, I was assistant editor with Vivienne Bonfield. Oh. So we worked together as an editorial team. And I did that for about 8 years, I think. Vivienne was involved much longer. But before that, I was very much involved on the board, of the editorial board for the journal.
Yeah. I think that is quite well known in Norway. Mm-hmm. Several colleagues have published there as well.
Yes, definitely.
Yes. What is the commission? How did it come about? What kind of work did you do? And yeah, so let's take it from there.
The commission was set up by the Religious Education Council for England and Wales, but the work only applied to England because now Wales is doing its own thing. The people, I think there was 14 of us, and we were chosen not as representatives of any group, but as ourselves. So we were chosen as people from, not all from the world of education. There was a journalist and a lawyer, and but people who could, somebody from school governors, and people who could shed some light from their own perspective on the problem of RE.
So what is the purpose and aim of the commission?
The purpose and aim was to look at some of the issues and problems that religious education had because of the changes in society and the changes in law about religion and the changes in government, and to work out the best way forward.
So what were those issues?
Some of the issues and problems were the changing religious landscape. You know, we can't presume that everybody is Christian, for instance. They haven't been for a long time, but you know, the majority now saying they're non-religious. Also, the change in politics around schools, such as the decrease in power of the local authorities, who were finding it impossible, they no longer had the advisors or the people who could do the syllabuses, and changes in funding, academisation, which meant even if you had these syllabuses, nobody had to do them. So it was like a crazy situation where people were sitting around devising something that maybe no school would do. Yeah. But also practical things like teacher supply. There was a shortage of RE specialists and RE teachers. So the report looked at a whole series that I could go on, but a whole series of things that were problematic.
It will be in the report.
It is in the report, yes. Yeah.
Put the links online.
The commission was looking into how can RE go forward into the future.
So what kind of work did you do?
Well, we met in person up until, we met in person from 2016 to 2018. It was very intense, residential, overnight, staying together. And with questions and agenda, and we brought in specialist speakers to talk to us and give presentations. We also went around the country, meetings in different parts of the country, talking to teachers, pupils, visiting schools, collecting lots and lots and lots of data and information. There was various surveys and all sorts of information that we put together and analysed. And then the job was to come up with some recommendations. We came up with the interim recommendations and made them public and got a lot of feedback on that. And then we came up with the final report. But the important thing for people to realise that in the first instance it was addressed to the government, to politicians. So that was the first audience, because many of the things we suggest require changes to the law of the land, and we knew that wasn't going to happen very quickly. But we were setting out what needs to change about the law on RE. But then we also knew that we would probably have more people who would actually read it and find it interesting would be more likely to be people in education and teachers. But it is addressed, the audience. It's not a book, you know, it's not a recommendations for teachers, it's recommendations for the people who are in charge of making decisions and the people who have the money.
Both the reports.
Both the reports, yeah, yes. Yeah. So that was the sort of initial, that we didn't expect that things would change overnight, but that it might, like earlier work and research in the 1970s that brought in a more world religions approach, that things happen gradually and you put forward ideas and they will happen gradually. And we've put forward 11 recommendations. The first two have been most talked about because the others need the government to do something. The change to religion and worldviews as a name and the recommendation for a national entitlement for pupils because the local thing worked in some places and not in others. And we felt that it's not fair. That
there is national advice, isn't there?
Well, yes and no, in that there hasn't been until, well, still isn't really, a national, there was in 2004, recommend national non-statutory guidance, so it was advice.
That's the one I looked at.
Yes, you know? But that's now nearly 20 years ago.
Isn't it, yeah.
And things have changed. I mean, I thought that was a very good document, personally, but things have changed. And we thought there ought to be a national entitlement that all children in all schools, whatever their background, would be able to come out of school knowing about. And that's those things have been debated ever since. But the project, that was the report came out in 2018, but that's nearly 6 years ago. But since then, the Worldviews project as a whole has continued.
I think we have to pause for that, I think it's a significant thing for audience in Norway or abroad that you actually suggested to change the name of the subject to religions and worldviews. Yeah.
Religion, singular.
Religion, yeah, exactly. Religion and worldviews.
So maybe people haven't noticed, sometimes people have not heard that because they see religion, they say religions, plural, and worldviews, plural.
Yeah.
And it was actually a colleague from Exeter, Jeff Tees, who pointed, now himself retired, who pointed out that if you say something and something, like fish and chips, they are two separate things.
Yeah.
There's that thing and that thing. So we were not saying there's religions and then there's worldviews. The singular religion is the concept of religion. What is, looking at the concept of religion and related concepts like what is spiritual, what is secular. But what is religion? And also to indicate the field of study from which it comes. So this has come out of the study of religions and the study, which now includes the study of non-religion. So that's the field of study that it comes from, and also to look at the concept. And when it comes to worldviews, we included religious worldviews are there with worldviews. So it's the concept of religion and worldviews, including religious worldviews. And non-religious worldviews, and all the other worldviews that are maybe non-binary between the two.
Exactly.
Or draw upon some aspects of religious worldviews and some aspects of secular worldviews to make their own. And this is increasingly happening. Religion, singular, indicates discussion of the problematic concept, which is religion. Because it means different things to different people.
And it's the field of study.
And it indicates the field of study.
Yeah.
Study of religion and brackets, including non-religion.
Yeah.
Worldviews is the term that we've chosen as the inclusive of religious, non-religious, non-binary. And it covers both personal, individual worldviews and community worldviews, and big institutional organised worldviews, like a church, or an organised systematic philosophical worldview, like Marxism or something like that. So whatever people live by, whether it's on the big scale or on a personal scale.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we discussed for a long time in working out our concept of worldview, and if you look either on the Big Ideas site or on the Religious Education Worldviews Project, Religious Education Council of England and Wales website, it explains what we meant by worldview. Because people mean different things by worldview, the same as religion.
Yeah.
And for ours, it wasn't just the intellectual, someone's philosophy, or it's not about just ideas. It's the whole of, it includes the whole of your life. So it's your ideas, your values, your emotions, the whole way you look at and approach life as an individual, or like in our big idea six, how a tradition looks at the whole of life. So it's very much important to stress that it's not just about ideas and beliefs and doctrines and truth claims. It's about how you live your life.
Way of life.
Your way of life and values and feelings. Yeah. You know, sometimes people, their religion isn't so much something they can articulate in cognitive ways. It's about feelings, and it's about traditions.
Remember, you said to me once that worldviews were not an established concept in the English context, whereas in Norway we have had worldviews education of sorts in schools since 1974, actually, but also developing, and it was a separate subject for two periods, and then worldviews sort of was included into the inclusive subject then in 1997. And the way I see it is that from that moment on, it froze. So the concept of worldviews sort of were kept on, but in a very particular way, similar to the way that the world religions were very dominant for many years. Then the it was a little bit what is worldviews, but then it was secular humanism. So it's almost like, and even with my students, if I say, can you give an example of another worldview? They can't.
Yes. I think, and that's one thing that I think people who were worried, or still are worried about the worldviews approach, that's one of the things they are legitimately afraid of, that it will become rigid and secular humanism will become sort of presumed as the norm through which everything else is viewed. And that's somehow a part of the agenda, which it isn't. And I think this, just as the world religions approach, going back to my guru, Ninian Smart, it never was never the world religions paradigm, as people call it now, where you have the fixed, separate world religions, and who decides which counts and who gets to be a world religion, was never part of the way he thought about things, and that we thought about things in the 1970s.
Because you studied with Ninian Smart.
I did, yes.
Yeah, tell us and about so that. It,
well, that was a great opportunity. I did that as part of my master's degree when I changed from theology, to I have a background in traditional Bible, and learning Hebrew and Greek and theology, systematic theology and biblical studies. And I changed and went to Lancaster, which was pioneering religious studies or study of religions, and studied with Ninian Smart and the people who were starting this. And it wasn't frozen, like you said. It wasn't rigid. It was fluid then. And not over the years, it's become rigid.
Is it a school thing, or is it a concept developed like that? Why did it develop like that?
I think it's a kind of oversimplification that you have to. There's David Lewin talks about pedagogical reduction. You can't use university level nuanced debate with 7 year olds.
No.
You know, so you have to, in some senses, make things simpler. But one of Dave's sayings is make things simple, but
simple as possible, but no simpler.
Because
Einstein was the first to have said.
I think people. I think it's to do with teacher education and continued professional development. Is people got the idea? Oh, I'm supposed to be teaching this without knowing the thinking behind it, or without maybe getting a textbook that said, this is Sikhism, this is Buddhism, this is Hinduism. And it sort of got, it became rigid and frozen. Because if you look back at that, which I have been doing, materials that we had in the 1970s, it wasn't these, you know, the big six world religions we have in Britain.
We have five.
You have five, because we put Sikhism in for colonial reasons and historical reasons. It's interesting, in, every country has a different list of the major world religions, and it, because of their culture and because of their background. But there's things about Rastafarians and non-religious worldviews and all sorts of things in the early material. Somehow, like you were describing in Norway, it got fixed.
Yeah.
And it never meant to be fixed. But the word worldview was also very much a favourite of Ninian Smart's, because his alternative name for religious studies was worldview analysis.
Yeah.
And that word is back there in the late 60s and early 70s. And we used it quite a bit back then. And then it kind of, unlike it stuck in Norway, it kind of went out of fashion in we didn't talk about worldviews for some time. And I think partly because worldviews got made rigid and it tended to be used for the cognitive side. And even in some of the writing from the 70s, worldviews were your sort of intellectual philosophy about life. So it would be the doctrines and the sacred texts and that bit, but not the practice.
Practical,
and so it kind of lost that side. Yeah. And we, in the new worldviews approach, we've put that side in.
Yeah.
It's a holistic view of a human person. You know, we're not just going around ahead with ideas.
Yeah.
We have a heart with feelings and experiences. And people, I think some people misunderstand other people's religious beliefs because they don't see the experiences and the feelings behind what's being said. They just hear the words and think that sounds crazy. But you need to know where, what, out of which experiences, what this person's talking
maybe
about.
This new development with the big ideas and these new developments is a way of trying to unfreeze the frozen.
To be
relevant, to put it closer to people's lives.
And make it fluid, more fluid. You know, things are, and the words are not, just as words change their meaning and are not, things move and change. And the place of different traditions change. But some bits are very precious and you don't want them to change. So that's why we have change and continuity.
Yeah.
There's a value in, it's not change everything just for the sake of it, but things do change in changing contexts.
Yeah.
And yet you could argue, I mean, religious traditions and non-religious traditions would argue, but you know, the heart of it stays the same. The core of it stays the same. It's just expressed in a new way for a new context.
Yes. I wonder where to go, because it's floating beautifully. But we were talking earlier a little bit about the religion problem. Because I like very well the chapter that you wrote in the Hanum and Bista book about the concept or the phenomenon of religion.
I have to stress that was written alongside my colleague, Dr. Catherine Robinson, who is an expert in especially the Hindu tradition and very knowledgeable about the history of the term. I learned a lot from her, and we worked on this together. Because we used to teach me for many years. And, you know, lecture number one is what is religion. Lecture number two is what is spirituality. And we worked together, and she helped me with a lot of the historical background of the concept of religion and with some of the Eastern traditions. So we worked together on that chapter. Though I tended to present it, because she didn't go to so many conferences as me. But definitely it's just much Catherine's work as my work. But looking at, because for many, many years we looked this together with our students in and out and up and down. So
the way I remember it is that that chapter sort of represented the Eastern religions quite a lot, and for that reason brought a debate about what is religion
because it's a term that came out of Western European thinking. And so it's not very useful even in Western tradition, but it's particularly even less useful sometimes when trying to describe traditions. It's Eastern, she says, generalizing, but if you go to a Hindu, Buddhist, Confucian, Shinto, and also contemporary pagan traditions, the term doesn't work as understood by many people, doesn't work so well. And then it leads to distortions when people are trying to understand, say, the Hindu tradition through the lens of religion, a concept of religion that came from 18th century, 19th century Christianity. It just doesn't work. It distorts.
How so?
Because it's imposing categories. So you might think, well, a religion has to have a belief in God, one God with a big G, and it has to have a sacred book, and it has to have, and a church. And the scholars went to look for similar things in other people's traditions, and therefore didn't see them as the adherents would see them in their own categories, their own categories of thought. So scholars especially scholars of Eastern traditions have argued over the last few decades that, you know, the concept of religion, some people want to do away with it altogether because it's so unhelpful. So academically it can be unhelpful, but also socially, Linda Woodhead and other sociologists of religion, that religion doesn't work very well in the contemporary world either. It's not just academics saying it doesn't work for us. It doesn't work because people hear the word religion and think, ooh, that's nothing to do with me. I'm not religious because of the concept of religion that they have in their head. And I'm just reading, there's some new work come out from America, research I was reading about this morning, that said the one thing that people don't like about religion is organised religions. And so that's what people often mean. You know, they don't want to go and join a church or
Or the political side. Group,
or the political side, maybe.
But the spiritual side.
Yeah, and so there's all of these debates about... so it is a problematic word because it means different things to different people, to different scholars, to different ordinary people in the street, even to religious people. Many religious people don't like the word religion. And they would say, how many books have you looked at? They said, so-and-so, it's not a religion, it's a way of life. Whether it's Buddhism or Native American tradition of one sort or another. So it is a big problem.
It is.
So we need to discuss right from the beginning with small children, what do we mean when we say this word religion?
Because it's out there. And it there are two things, though. What happens if we remove it, you know? Is religion a phenomenon by category? Because the category is there, it's been there, people are using it, it's a phenomenon. Or is religion something in and of itself? That's one question. And the other question is, if we do remove it, then religion disappears from the face of the earth.
Exactly. I don't think that it... I wouldn't be an essentialist and say there is, you know, an essential core. That's religion. But nevertheless, it is a word and a term that we use that does have meaning, even though those meanings are different and fluid and growing. So I'm not with those who want to... Some people would say, do away with it. But then they suggest something else like culture, and that doesn't... Then you have to discuss what do we mean, and they don't get any further. So I think it's a useful term to talk about the sort of things we want to talk about, like the big ideas about people's feelings, about their views of life and all those things. So I think it's a useful term, but you always have to say, but what do you mean? What are you meaning by it? And, you know, what do children mean by it? Because for some people it means their identity or their beliefs or their values or the things that their ancestors told them they must do, so you do it. Traditions, feelings, personal faith, community and organisation. So I think two scholars stick in my mind And one is Jonathan Zed Smith, who said it's just a tool. You know, it's something that we use to think with, but it's not a thing. You know, it's not a ray. It isn't a thing out there, but it's a useful way of organising our thoughts and writings about a certain aspect of human experience and dimension. And then Russell McCutcheon said, "Well, it's up to you to decide what you mean by it, and then tell people. You know, you have to share it. So when I use the word religion, I mean this. Okay." And I don't think we can do away with, that's why the core didn't just call it worldviews, or one of the reasons why we didn't. It's religion and worldviews, because we think it's still a useful concept as long as we problematise it and share with children from quite young ages that, you know, what does this word mean? Because it means different things to different people, and we all have to decide how we're going to use it and... explain to people, but it causes so many problems in trying to have conversations about this area of human experience, because everybody's got their preconceived idea about what we're talking about. Does this make any sense?
That may not be so different from other concepts. Maybe religion is an extreme, but it might be very much the same with any established concept which points towards one, two, three different meanings.
It is. I mean, it's a cliche of academic life in universities. You start by saying,
well, you take any other curriculum subject, art.
What is art?
You're into a huge area of...
So are humans basically music beings.
Exactly. So, you know, I think my students used to get fed up with me saying, well, it depends what you mean by. And it just does, doesn't it? Because it's just, these things are words that we use.
Yeah.
And we have to debate what we mean by.
On the other hand, there are also real phenomena in the world that we use that word for describing, or to gather together a range of phenomena which we call religious or spiritual or
and it's helpful as long as you don't let it solidify in your head. I think keep it fluid. So, and it's true, there is stuff out there. I think that the scholars say that religion isn't out there, but obviously there are people praying, and there are mosques, and there are temples, and all that is there. But we've kind of reified the concept of religion, you know, and we've talked about...
I have no idea which of these points we have covered or not. But I think it's an interesting discussion. Like I told you, I'm just going through a book which is discussing the concepts of religion or essentiality, or whether we need the concept, and so the relationship between theology and religious studies.
Well,
and
that's another one.
Which, when I came to England with Bob Jackson, I basically was told that debate was over and done with, and I didn't. And it isn't. It's obviously not in Norway, but maybe not even here. And
I don't think so. I think it's ongoing.
Yeah.
The debate about the... Because the university level in this country, the subject is called, for purposes of government and things, theology and religious studies. So, two things that are also one thing. And so the relationship between the two is still very debated. And it's, and I did both. So,
but with regard to religious education, is it over and done with? Or are we still...
Because there are people, I suppose the world religions approach, which I distinguish from the world religions paradigm, was very much linked to religious studies and Ninian Smart and that tradition. I'm just trying to catch my line of thought. And theology, although it can, you know, it is an academic subject, was more associated with with Christian theology mostly, originally. And so the debate is still going on about the relationship between the two and which should have influence on religious education in schools.
So, can it be settled, like agreeing there should be both? Or is it, does it, you know, does it have to be conflicted?
Well, there's a bit of jockeying for position, I think, as to which is, so I'm trying to think how to say this, because it's very complicated, the debates are quite complicated, and so I think personally that theology does have a place within religious education, but Robert Frith from Exeter is very good at exploring this. It has a has a place, but only certain approach, theological approaches, not all theological approaches. But
there is also a nuance there, because not having any background in theology myself, I've come to understand that there are different theologies,
plural. Yeah, you cannot generalize about anything. Rule number one. So it depends what you mean by theology. But I feel very strongly that the overarching subject is the study of religions. And that, and world, and non-religious worldviews, religious worldviews, non-religious worldviews, and that within that there are contributory disciplines. Including theology. But you see, I would have religious studies, theology is contributing to religious studies, whereas theologians might have religious studies contributing towards theology. So there's a bit of an argument about who's on top. And the current debates about disciplines, there's a school of thought that says the contributory disciplines to religious education in schools, or religion and worldviews education, are theology, philosophy, and
social sciences.
Anthropology.
Well, social sciences, they say. And
Did you say philosophy?
Theology, philosophy, and social sciences. And I read this and said, thought, but where is religious studies? Is it in theology? And I read, and it didn't seem to be in theology, because so that was mainly about beliefs and texts and sacred books. Didn't seem to be in philosophy. And it seemed to be mostly considered to be a social science. And this, is, again, is debatable, but I don't see study...
So is religious studies then seen as social science?
By some, by these people, by this group that are arguing this. And then there was a fourth, the inspector at the time brought in the idea of history. And so what I'm arguing in various places is that study of religions is the overarching concept. And you can study religions through these different disciplines. But I argue that study of religions is a discipline in itself.
But then religion needs to be something.
Exactly. So study of religions and non-religious worldviews. But then you know, with people who are within that subject discipline know what they're talking about. And so I think they, in having philosophy, theology and social sciences, I don't agree that study of religion is just a social science, because it also uses history, it also uses textual studies and hermeneutics, it also study literature and art and anthropology and sociology and psychology and music and the natural sciences, especially neuroscience. So I think there's lots and lots of disciplines, which is the reason I wanted to do it. But I think that also applies to theology. And that's the reason I wanted to study theology, because I thought it was lots of different disciplines. So I don't think there is one discipline called theology either. So I think both theology and religious studies are cross-disciplinary disciplines, or polymethodic, as Ninian Smart used to say. But
Methodic.
Many methods. Polymethodic. Polymethodic. So I feel quite strongly about all of this. And I was worried that religious studies was being sidelined. But there are people who think, scholars who think, that going down the religious studies or study of religions line was a bad influence on religious education in schools. Because they interpret it as a complete, well, this is my understanding, that it was neglecting the student's personal moral social development, which it never was. That wasn't... Well, not in the case in our classrooms, anyway.
Yeah, good.
So there's lots of arguments, lots of complicated arguments.
We certainly have talked for some while, and we haven't even talked about the non-binary worldviews.
But
I think we need to round it off. But just, I know that you have also, like me, been interested in that concept, and that you have outed yourself as being non-binary. Can we perhaps end on that note?
So, for when I decided about 30 years ago that I couldn't any longer identify as a Catholic, that was my background, and I taught in Catholic faith schools and a liberal kind of Catholic. But I decided that my views had moved my personal worldview had moved far from what people understood as a Catholic or a Christian worldview, and that it was dishonest to call it that, really. And so I stopped calling myself a Catholic or a Christian. And then it was difficult to say, because I was drawing upon the many religions that I'd studied, and also upon secular humanism and different philosophies. Yeah. And it was the first person I heard use it was
Richard Holloway,
who was
former Bishop of Edinburgh.
And I was just listening to the radio one day, and he was talking, and he was saying that's how he is. And he says he used this word non-binary between religious and non-religious. I thought, that's a good way of putting it. That all my rest of my life I've been thinking, well,
When was that?
It was about 2016. I was just about that time. And then I read some of his work, and I thought, that's a good idea. And you were thinking along, we were both thinking along similar lines. So just as people talk about being non-binary in relation to gender.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't, if I call myself religious, it didn't seem to quite work. And if I called myself non-religious, it didn't quite work for me, because I was somewhere in between that distinction, or that distinction no longer made any sense to me.
Yeah.
So then how it worked out in practice is that we had a kind of multi-faith and non-faith, non-binary type of wedding in 2018, Dave and I.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to just have a civil ceremony, and we didn't want to have a one religion ceremony. So we had a non-religious civil ceremony, which in England you're not allowed to have anything religious. Except people...
You can't mention God.
You can't mention God, but people may not recognise that some religious things might creep in, but officially it shouldn't be religious at all. And so we arranged to have a non-religious ceremony followed by some religious blessings, multi-faith from the... We thought our poor relations and friends couldn't cope with, like, 20 different religions, so we chose the ones that we'd been most involved with recently in our
personal
studies
friends,
and personal friends, which was Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism and paganism. And we had blessings and a little mini ceremony from the goddess priestess from Glastonbury. And the funny thing that's might be worth saying is that the ceremony was held in a deconsecrated chapel. So the civil ceremony could be held there, the non-religious ceremony, in this ex-chapel. But their conditions of licence for weddings, we found out a few weeks just before we were about to get married, you weren't allowed to have anything religious in that...
In that building?
In that building. So we thought, oh, no. So we said, it says... We looked at it and having a kind of legalistic frame of mind, so it said, in the building. So we said, what about out in the garden? So we were able to, she said, OK, it doesn't say not in the garden. So we...
hired a marquee at the last minute.
And we had the non-religious ceremony in an ex-chapel and the religious blessings in a marquee in the garden.
Yeah, wonderful.
And luckily it was a sunny day and we could have some of it outside.
Yeah. That is a good place to end, I think. Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Du har hørt en episode av KRL-podden. Og hvis du hørte godt etter under samtalen med Denise, la du kanskje merke til en mannsstemme som dukket opp underveis. Det var Dave Francis. Og neste gang Oddrun tilbake i studio, skal du få høre mer fra han. I tillegg til at Oddrun fortsetter forklaringen av forskjellene mellom skolen I Norge og England. KRLE-podden har blitt en forening. Gå til www.krlepodden.com for å se hvordan du kan melde deg inn og støtte podcasten. Musikken I denne episoden var ved Lee Rosevere. Jeg heter Inge Andersland. Takk for at du hørte på.